Welcome to another episode of Code for Thought. Right in the heart of central London, you will find the British Library. And once inside, there is the Alan Turing Institute, a UK national institute created in 2015 to focus on data science and related applications like artificial intelligence and machine learning. Data science, AI and machine learning turn out to be highly interdisciplinary, as they require people with different core skills, be that in science itself, software engineering, infrastructure, team and project management, and so forth. However, when it comes to defining these core skills, there's very little agreement, not to mention consistency. And that is before we even start talking about roles that are still not recognized in a scientific context. But with a sharp increase of data science projects in all the different facets, it is high time that we get a clearer idea and picture of what kind of skills we need and would like to see in teams. And to address this, the Alan Turing Institute awarded 4 individuals as part of their Skills and Policy Award program to meet the challenges in terms of professionalization and organizational structures in data science. And one of the awardees is Dr. Emma Caroon from the Alan Turing, and in her work, Emma focuses on the kind of roles or personas that might be needed for modern data science teams. In this episode, I had a chance with Emma and some of her colleagues to talk about her work and how, in practical terms, the Alan Turing Institute is handling the demand on skills and roles in their data science projects. We first hear from Emma, who is giving us an overview of the program in more detail.
Hello, Emma. Very nice to meet you. And before we start talking about the Skills and Policy Award and the case study and the project that you're involved with, maybe you can quickly introduce yourself.
Yeah. Hi, Peter. So my name's Dr. Emma Caroon. I'm a senior research community manager at the Alan Turing Institute. I had a bit of a windy path getting to my community building role that I now hold. I actually originally am an archaeologist. I have a PhD from University College London, and I actually specialise in microscopic plants that you find on archaeological sites. And after that, I actually went off to be a teacher, a science teacher, for my sins in high schools in London. So that was very hard work. But I came back into academia a while after teaching, and I've really concentrated on open research, and I work on multiple projects now. I run a community building project in my particular discipline called Open Phytolith Communities, where we're trying to bring open research practices into that particular discipline of archaeology. Mm-hmm. But at the Turing, I actually specialise in community building in health projects. Mm-hmm. So I've worked on lots of COVID projects, and at the moment we've been doing things like workshops on bringing climate experts together with public health experts to try and see if we can foster collaboration in that quite niche area. Yeah, it's a very diverse role that I actually have, and I really enjoy that.
That sounds very exciting. So since when are you at the Alan Turing Institute then?
So I've been at the Alan Turing Institute since the beginning of 2021. I actually joined in the middle of the COVID lockdown. And it actually was to work on a COVID project, to be a community manager in a COVID project, because at that time, lots of people were starting these new collaborations. So the community building aspect or specialism was really needed to really facilitate a research community to work together online, which was quite new actually at the time. And I actually worked at the Turing, I think, for more than a year before I actually met the people directly that I worked with at the Turing in person because of all the lockdowns and everything and the office being closed. So that was quite an experience, because you get to know people online and you feel like you really know them. And when you meet them in person, it's quite a different experience, isn't it?
I'm still having that experience when I go to conferences couple of years after the pandemic officially ended, at least. I find myself meeting people I've met only online so far.
Yeah.
And it's always a little bit weird, isn't it?
Yes, it's always taller. People are always taller.
Yes. So the reason we're coming together today is because there's the Skills and Policy Award at the Alan Turing. And in fact, we're going to do another episode on the same subject. But today there is something very specific that we want to talk about, and which is case studies. But before we start, it actually ties back to the, and I'm reading this out now, UK Research and Innovation, the Bridge AI Programme, and the Alan Turing Institute that developed a framework for it. And yeah. Could you ease us into what that actually means, and then we can come to the case study itself?
Yeah. So the project that I've been leading over the last year is a Skills Policy Award project, which obviously has a policy and skills focus, as in the name. So my project is around a specific need that was identified in the National Data Strategy of the UK, which was around professionalisation of data science careers or data science skills, and the fact that there wasn't really much definition of what a data scientist did or people working in data science. And things like skills frameworks and job descriptors for these roles were very much different between different organisations, even in research organisations, but also across different sectors. So it's really hard at the moment for people who want to come into data science to understand what the different roles are, you know, what the different career pathways are. So really people and employers are finding it quite difficult for people to particularly move between different organisations at the moment or come into data science in terms of the data science workforce. So one project that kind of aligns with my project is this Bridge AI project or programme at Turing, which I have used to base my particular case study on, where I'm focusing on personas of these different data science specialist roles or data science team roles. It's at Turing. Matt Forshaw, who is our head for national skills at Turing, has been working with different domains. So I know one is agriculture. It's very much focused on businesses, Bridge AI. And he has actually developed a framework of skills. So he's developed these personas that are at quite high level. One of them, which I've been focusing on, is the one that he has developed for AI professionals. So it lays out a persona for someone who works as a professional in the AI workforce. I have actually used that as my starting persona in my case study to sort of lay out a what I've called a data science and AI professional persona. That actual persona is a very broad persona that would cover really anybody that worked in our data science teams at the Turing. So it's kind of an overall persona for anybody working in the data science or AI workforce.
So I do remember that we met at the Hidden Ref Festival last year in Bristol.
Yeah.
And I do remember that you ran a workshop on something very similar.
That's
Has
right.
any of the output from that workshop fed into the case study that you've now developed or are still developing?
That's a really good question. So part of this project that I've been leading, I have been going to many different conferences to talk about research infrastructure roles and how we can recognise them, how we can start to professionalise them in terms of understanding their definitions, skills and career pathways. And so I got involved in the Hidden, actually I was invited to be part of the Hidden Ref Committee by Simon Heterick. So I said yes. As you say, it's very aligned with this project. And at the Hidden Ref Festival, I did run a workshop on hidden roles. And this is just one of the problems with working in research infrastructure roles is that many of them are not recognised at the moment. So it does link very closely with that workshop. I actually ran another workshop about a month after the Hidden Ref Festival. One of the sort of main themes that came out when we were talking about career pathways was the othering problem. By that, I mean that people are defined in these roles as other than researchers. And actually, it's a complete misconception because really everyone that works in these specialist roles, they have research backgrounds. They often have qualifications up to PhD level. And we all identify as researchers and we are part of research teams. But in many institutions, these roles are actually what I would say is othered. So they are often in HR terms seen and classified as support roles. And really, that's completely wrong. And this is why we sort of talk about them as unrecognised or hidden roles or othered roles,
right.
Because they just really need to be recognised on the same level as someone who is a what we call a traditional researcher. So someone like a postdoctoral researcher, someone who's like a lecturer or senior lecturer. People that work in these infrastructure roles have equivalent experience in specific domains. They have very specialist skills, which a lot of traditional researchers don't have. It's just that people who work in these roles they've decided to specialise in a particular research skill to enable research projects to happen.
What I'm picking up on is that we're actually having two important goals, one of which is the recognition of roles which traditionally have not been accepted as research roles. And the other one is to find a framework or a common language, shall we say, for describing what these roles are.
Yeah.
Is there another dimension that goes into this?
I think it's to find a way forward, because I think at the moment, the sort of policy landscape, the funding landscape, particularly in the UK, is set up to enable teams of research infrastructure roles, well, data science teams that include specialists. And we're just really looking now for institutional buy-in to these teams. We can apply for grants to enable these teams to happen. There has been UKRI funding that's currently making that happen. But I think there's still these structural issues. So my third goal is, so you've talked about the recognition, the awareness part, I think, the definition of the roles, but then actually the action. I would say that's my third part, is actually making people buy into this way of working, which I think is the way that we actually need to work, particularly in data science, because data science is a very complex way of doing research. It does require an interdisciplinary team. That in itself tells you that you need a variety of different people with a variety of skills to make these research projects happen. So I think we just need to really start embracing that and actually put into action to enable people to have sustainable career paths in these specialist roles, not just short-term contracts where they jump from place to place, because that is not good for anybody's career. It's not good for institutions, because you're training these people and then they're moving on and they're taking all that really great knowledge, the institutional knowledge, the skills that they've developed within that particular project, and they're going to apply that in somebody else's project in a different institution. It's much better if we can start to really think about how we can have teams of these particular specialisms and enable people to progress in their careers in particular institutes.
And we're going to talk about this in the second episode, because I think we're going a little bit more into depth about policies. And for this one, I'm also interested in the team composition, or in the case study that you've come up with, because as you say, you have a data science team, but a data science team is not a group of people with all the same roles. They have quite distinct roles. So what kind of roles are we looking at? Could you give us some examples of how diverse that is and what it looks like?
So I would first say that our case study, what we're not trying to say that we are doing the best thing. We're not the best example or the only example of a data science team. What we're trying to do with this case study is just say, this is how we do data science at the Turing. And we want other people to kind of say the same thing. I'm really interested to hear other people do similar case studies and say, like, this is how we have approached doing data science at our organization. So this is just kind of one example of how you can bring together a really large group or interdisciplinary group of researchers, of people who work in research specialist roles, to kind of work together. The other thing to point out is that our data science teams are not the same for every project. It really depends on the type of project that we're actually doing to the makeup of the team. So actually, the makeup is quite flexible, and it's determined sometimes by the amount of money that we have to do the research project, because that's always limiting in research. But it's also the skill demand within the project. So there might be one project that really requires a research community manager, because part of it is building a new community around that particular research theme. So we would definitely have a community manager, but in other projects, we might not actually have one. There is kind of flexibility in that. But we have groups of different specialist teams at Turing. So we have, in the programme that I work in, which is Tools, Practices and Systems, we have a number of different teams. So we have the Research Community Management team. We also have Research Application Managers, which are a bit like product managers in industry, but they take open source software, open data, and they try and repurpose that or make it more available for other users. So they repurpose it into other research projects, or it could be into industry, something like that. So they really work with users of those open source outputs that we have. We have people that work in public engagement. We also have citizen scientists as well. We also have a really large research engineering group at Turing, where they have within that research data scientists. They also have research software engineers and research computing or infrastructure engineers as well. So sort of three roles within a larger team of an engineering group. We also have team members who work particularly on getting data ready for research. They're known as the data wranglers, which I think is the best term of a specialist. I imagine them with cowboy hats. They are really important. They wrangle our data. So they find where the best data is, they assess the data, and they standardize the data. We also have teams within our public policy program, which are specialists in ethics. And I think ethics and responsible innovation. And actually, I think that team is incredibly important at the moment. And then we also have project and program managers. And that one is slightly controversial when I say that, because most people would not include project managers or program managers in what they would define as their kind of research data science team. But I do, because they are extremely skilled, the ones that we have at Turing, technical skills particularly, to work with data science teams. So they are specific project managers for data science teams. So for me, I want to classify them as part of the data science team rather than being maybe, I don't want to other them, like I've been talking about. I don't want them to be in the business team, because they are very integral members of our data science team. So those are kind of the specialists that we have within our teams. We also have what I call domain experts. So those are our postdoctoral researchers. They can be the program directors. I would say on that side, the specialists or our specialists also have domain knowledge. They don't always work in the domain that they have the specialist knowledge in. Like myself, I don't really work on archaeological projects. I work on a lot of health projects. But the domain experts is we have to work with them because they bring this interdisciplinary team together. It could also be people like clinicians that we work with. So it can be a very large team.
As I said, the use cases that you described, they are not prescriptive in the sense that this is exactly how you should run a data science team, because it does vary after all what you've just said. But you described a common language or a common framework of the kind of roles that could be relevant or would be relevant from your perspective in data science or in somebody who is building a data science team. What would you say, how should people use these kind of use cases?
So what I've tried to do is we have a large variety of roles. So I've tried to capture those large variety of roles. What I want people to do is really sort of compare and contrast. So what do you do in your organization? What roles do you have that are similar? They might not be called the same thing. And that's one of the problems with research infrastructure roles at the moment, is that like a research community manager has many different names. It could be called a network lead. It could be called a communications and engagement lead or something like that. So the name isn't necessarily that important. It's more of a kind of skill area, I would say, is each of the personas. Each of the personas has a sentence at the beginning which actually says what the core responsibilities are of that particular role. So, for example, research community managers, our core responsibilities are to provide opportunities for engagement and communications for the research community. So there are lots of roles that could be within that. And then we go on to each of the personas has particular levels of competencies and skills that are within that. So each of them is high level, but gives some detail around the skills and the competencies needed in each particular area. And I just think I would love people to sort of, as I said, compare and contrast our case study, our different personas that we're putting out there, and see where their roles fit into our personas or where they don't, and how they work with them and how they kind of mesh them together. Because there's definitely overlap between our personas. But then, as I said, our teams are quite flexible. So it might mean that in one project, you might have a research community manager. And in another project, you might have our research application manager, and that might be the person that does the stakeholder engagement. There are crossovers between each of the roles, and that that actually is the reality of the roles. They do actually cross over. There is some sort of fluidity between the roles.
As Emma said, the case study of data science team personas is an example and hopefully will inspire a conversation of what kind of roles and skills are needed in data science teams in future. But talking about roles and skills can all be very high level and abstract. And so I met with a number of other team members of the Alan Turing Institute to get a handle on what their roles actually entail, what they mean, and what their daily work looks like. At first we'll hear from Aida Mehonik, where she explains her role.
My name is Aida Mehonik. I work at the Alan Turing Institute in London. Well, The headquarters is based in London, and I've been with the Institute since 2018. At the moment, I work in a program called Tools, Practices and Systems. We are, very broadly speaking, focusing on open research and open science and reproducibility best practices in data science. Lots of great different strands of work in there. And my own role, so I'm a senior researcher looking after research applications, and we are a little team of research application managers working within this sort of open research umbrella at the Institute under a big program called Tools, Practices and Systems.
So what kind of projects are you involved with? Could you give us a flavor of what they are?
So the team of research application managers is currently 7 or 8 people. So I currently head up the team, and we work across probably 30 to 50 projects as a team. So it's very much a portfolio approach. The projects themselves are your somewhat typical academic research, data science or AI related grant funded research projects. Mm-hmm. We have a concentration in several domains. Currently, we have quite a lot of concentration in engineering sciences. We have had projects in health. We have had projects, broadly speaking, in environment and sustainability, some smaller ones in sort of agriculture. We have a project in image recognition, but sort of applied to a natural environment research, and so on and so forth. It's not an exhaustive list. So kind of data science and AI projects applied in different domains.
In order to get a handle on what your role is and what you do on a daily basis, you go into these teams and you oversee the way open science principles are being implemented. Is that kind of a description?
It's quite right that that's one of our very big areas of interest, how open science principles and practices are being respected and sort of followed. That's certainly very high up on our list of priorities. But I'd say our sort of really number one priority is around empowering the research team to adapt the research outputs for some sort of real world use. We're sort of the usability, not engineers, we're more like product managers, but we're folks who like to join the research team quite early on and then ask the question, this is fantastic science, but who do you think will use this? And it's absolutely fine if the answer is it'll be just another lab. But sometimes the answer is we want local government to use this, or maybe members of the public interested in these kinds of questions. So we like to ask about the sort of potential end user and then adapt the output so that they are somewhat user-friendly and accessible to the appropriate user base, all with this aim of increasing their reach and ultimately their impact and sustainability through empowering the research team to reach out to the user base and think about them from quite early on in the project lifecycle.
So what does a typical day for you then look like?
It really is so varied. And that's one of the advantages, I think, of working in our team. It exposes the colleagues to lots of different types of projects, and it can be a little bit confusing sometimes. But, you know, I'd say the sort of bread and butter of what we do would be we would do some stakeholder mapping with the PI, with the project team. We would organize and help organize and scope some stakeholder workshops. Mm. We would think about output and features and how the product roadmap would look like, sort of delivery, the time scale of when these features might be available. And we would scope this with our engineering team. So we are sometimes in the role of translating somewhat and connecting between research focused folks and our in-house research software engineering folks. We work together to help scope the roadmap. And we've also had work with the user experience UX design to make these outputs more user-friendly. So there's a lot of connecting. The flavor of our work is facilitating connecting but all done with a very kind of hard-nosed focus on advocating for the user. And I would also say often with a technical hat as well. So we're sometimes seen as kind of product managers, generalists, but some of the folks are a bit more like technical product managers. So they try and get into the also technical detail of the project. Sorry, this was a bit of a long and rambling answer because it really is very varied. And some people work on a portfolio of projects and one or two focus on just one very large project.
Are there any projects that you and your team are not getting involved with?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's perfectly fine and perfectly impactful for colleagues at Alan Turing Institute to have a collaboration that looks at foundational research. And so we don't necessarily need to get involved in such projects. But whenever you have a sort of potential motivation and ambition to think about potential users, then I think we'd like to at least have a conversation.
A few moments before, in my conversation with Emma, she mentioned community managers. And I met with Vicky Helen, another community manager, who explains exactly what a community manager does and why they might be needed in data science teams.
My name is Vicky Helen, and I'm a research community manager at the Alan Turing Institute. I work on a health-related collaboration, which is called the Turing-Roche Partnership, and that's exploring personalized healthcare.
What is a community manager and what do they actually do?
A community manager really can vary. It varies within the Turing Institute and it actually varies, I think, a lot outside of the Turing. But at the Turing Institute, our kind of main role is embedding open and reproducible practices within the projects that we work on. We often have kind of socio-technical skills, so things like scientific communication, stakeholder engagement, project management, and things like that. And ultimately, building a shared understanding of research goals and the research roadmap across the Turing. The Turing Institute is great. We've got multiple community managers. So we actually sit within a team within the Institute as well.
You describe quite a number of different roles, like project manager, stakeholder management, and science communication. All of that is sometimes organizations have actually different people for these kind of roles. So how do you bring all of that together?
Yeah, so we do have project managers at the Turing, and all of the community managers often work very closely with their project managers, and there is a small amount of overlap. Also, we have comms and marketing teams at the Turing as well. So we're working with all those stakeholders, but bringing them together in smaller parts. Often we're seen as the point of contact within a project or program. So whilst we can maybe do small bits of those skills, we also can connect up our researchers with other teams at the Turing.
So how does that fit in with a data science team? So why does a data science team need a community manager?
Yeah, that's a great question. Often the projects we're working on at the Turing, and I think this does hold for data science projects, is they're often quite large projects, and often people are working quite independently on their kind of own code or data. And so it's really important with a community manager to have someone who's understanding what's going on across the breadth of a partnership and can bring those people together. And also, yeah, as I mentioned, build this shared understanding, ensuring everything's connected up and people are collaborating in a way that's useful for them and for the project.
You mentioned health projects.
Yes.
So could you give us a concrete example of what these projects are dealing with?
Yes. So the Turing-Roche Partnership is what I'm working on. So that's a 5-year collaboration and it kind of sits within the health program at the Turing. That project is bringing together the Turing Institute and Roche, which most people probably know is a big global pharmaceutical company. Mm-hmm. And what we're looking to do is develop new data science methods to investigate healthcare data sets and to ultimately better understand how and why patients respond differently to treatment and how treatment can be improved. So obviously that's a very kind of broad statement, but my role is bringing together. So we have a core team of colleagues at the Turing and Roche. So initially my role was navigating those cultural differences that can often come from academia working and industry working. But we've grown to have a large team of researchers and also some data wranglers as well. Within that health space, I'm navigating two sets of community. So I'm ensuring our researchers that are working on the partnership can collaborate together and kind of organize spaces for them to do that. but I'm also navigating and helping us with the external community as well. So ensuring that our research is accessible to people who are interested in it, and also works for both Turing and Roche.
Could you describe what a typical day, if it exists, looks like?
I can maybe run through a day I had this week.
Okay.
So yeah, on Monday, we have quarterly lab meetings, actually. I ran a meeting where we brought together all the postdocs and the principal investigators, as well as the core team of the partnership. So everyone did short presentations on their work, and we started to identify where there could be links between different people's work across the partnership. We have a conference on next week, very excitingly, and the partnership will be exhibiting there. Then I put together a document with a schedule on who's going to be at the booth. I then also made a start on writing a report for a workshop we had recently with the Clinical AI Interest Group, which is also based at the Turing. And I'm also running a scholars program. So we've got some PhD students engaging with the partnership and doing mini community projects. So a lot of different juggling tools on that day.
And now we finally come to the data wrangler. I was intrigued by the role title, and luckily I had the chance to meet one, Luis Santos, who works at the Turing, to shed some light on what a wrangler actually does.
My name is Luis Santos. My official title is a senior data wrangler in the Data for Research team, which is led by Anne-Marie Mallon. My background is actually in biology. I did a left turn into bioinformatics and ended up in a role called data wrangling for a few years now. And I've slowly been progressing in responsibilities and tasks. Been a bit of a journey.
We're doing this because there is the Alan Turing Skills and Policy Award, which basically tries to come up with a case study of what a data science team could possibly look like. And when I look at your role and your role title, it's kind of unique. You kind of get an idea of what it is, but I'd like to hear from you exactly what a data wrangler is.
It is a question that raises a lot of curiosity. So if one looks around, I think traditionally the answer that a data wrangler would be someone that falls within the responsibilities of securing or collecting, accessing different kinds of data resources and putting the data together, doing some maybe initial analysis and processing that data into somewhat a bit more manageable state. That would be the more classical definition if one were to say it like that. It's obviously not too far from that, but it is not just that. And the way that we fit into the data science roles is that if you'd imagine a project looking into some data that needs to develop, say, an AI model for something, they need to have access to a series of data sets or just one specific data set. We often position ourselves and we work within the space between the data generation and the analysts. So anything that goes from collection of the data, or if we can, influencing how the data is collected, but certainly from the origin of the data, the minute that it is put into some kind of record, we can interface and we can develop methods to get to that data or help developers in developing software that collects the data. We bring it together, we help, and we also can build the structures to put the data into more accessible formats, whether it be databases, whether it be virtual machines, where to host it, where to keep it. And then we also look into aspects of data quality and the data structure itself in order to make it more accessible for the ultimate analysis. So often the data in the state that it is at the origin is not immediately usable to load into a model, for instance. So we can help, we can work with researchers and developers and AI developers in order to create those formats, essentially.
Could you give us a concrete example of a project you're currently involved with, if that's possible?
Certainly, yes. For instance, we're currently working on a project that is looking at a openly available data set for cancer data. And the data itself, it has multiple modalities. So we have clinical data, which has been anonymized. We have genomics data. We have transcriptomics data. We have imaging data. And the team that's looking into this is interested in different aspects, but all of them want to look into different types of the data together. So we're all working together to try to bring that data in and making it more accessible, because it's currently set in a repository that has a web-based form of access. We're trying to pull that data in and making it available more directly to who's going to use it. But also, we're working to understand the data model behind that has been used originally in the project so that we can bring the whole data together and be able to link, say, from one entry on their data, which could equate to, say, a clinical study patient, and then getting all of the data for that patient together and then replicating that by 1,000 patients or so. That is one example of a challenge where we need to look into aspects of data governance, data privacy. Is it secure enough? Is it anonymized enough? Can we use it as is? Do we need to take other measures? How can we align and harmonize it? What standards or what formats are there that we can use that will make interpretation of this data more easy? So all these aspects have to be taken into consideration. So it's an interesting challenge.
And last but not least, we come to Catriona Goldmund and Jonathan Young, both data scientists. But the role of a data scientist is kind of fluid and moving between the data sciencey bits and software engineering, as they both explain in this brief conversation.
So my name is John. I'm a research data scientist at the Alan Turing Institute. We're part of the research engineering group. And today, I guess we'll be talking about the different roles that we have in this group. So just as a little bit of a background, I come from a chemistry background. I did my undergrad as well as a PhD in chemistry before joining the Turing. And during my PhD, I discovered programming and I discovered that I love it, but I also like research. And so this job, a nice way to merge both of these aspects.
My name is Katrina Urquhart. I am also a research data scientist within the research engineering group at the Alan Turing Institute. I'm originally from Scotland, and that's where I completed my undergraduate degree in physics at the University of Edinburgh. And that's where I got my first experience of programming. I then went on to do a PhD in bioinformatics at Queen Mary University London, which looked at multi-omic data. So that's kind of combining genomic, transcriptomic, proteomic protein data from individuals to try and understand response to treatment for autoimmune diseases. And so I guess I'm in the same situation as John there, where I've got experience programming and experience in research. And so combining the two in this job is kind of perfect for me.
And yet the role is described as data scientist. And sometimes people think that data scientist is something different to software engineering and programming. What would you say to that?
So I think in the research engineering group, we kind of see them as a bit of a spectrum. So we've got three named roles within the research engineering group, or REG as we call it. So we've got research data scientists, which I think both John and myself count ourselves as. Then we've also got research software engineers and research computer engineers. But yeah, as I said, we try to treat them as like a spectrum and three distinct roles. I mean, within REG, the team kind of helps the Turing community with designing, deploying, and maintaining research infrastructure. It kind of covers all these kind of things.
Just to add on that, our job titles are something that we can choose. And in fact, people have switched between job titles in the past. And so it's very much a term which people use to as a self-identification rather than something that, you know, your job title is a data scientist. So you're only allowed to do data sciencey bits and you're not allowed to do software engineering. Indeed, I think a lot of it comes down to what is data science and what is software engineering. And at the end of the day, there is quite a bit of overlap between this, because a lot of the software engineering we do is in terms of, you know, writing software that deals with data. Mm-hmm. So, and you can't deal with data without writing some kind of software. Although we have three different roles for it, the work we do is really a huge range of a spectrum, as Chad said.
Could you draw us a picture of what your role actually entails on a day-to-day basis?
So I'm currently involved in a project which is in collaboration with the UK Centre for Ecology and Hydrology, so that's the UKCH, which looks at monitoring biodiversity using automated systems. So as part of this project, my collaborators at the UKCH, along with other groups, have developed camera systems to record and monitor moth populations. So my role in this is to develop machine learning methods to classify species of moths from these images and for the machine learning models to be deployed on device. So that's using edge computing. That's what I do within this team. So the UKCH, a lot of entomologists and other things. So I really bring the data science and software engineering side to the project.
So despite my job title being a research data scientist, a lot of my work is actually, we consider more software engineering side. And specifically, my last project was on urban analytics or the science of cities and regions, where we were developing machine learning models to predict quality of life indicators based on land use. So what do you build and where do you build it? And how does that affect things like air pollution, house prices and other factors? Although there was a data science bit to this, which was aggregating input data from various sources, censuses, and all of that stuff. But there was also a question of how do we visualize this data and make it accessible to the public. And the way we chose to do that, and the part which I worked on, was the development of a web app to display this interactively, to let people come up with their own scenarios of how they might like to develop a city and see whether that's a good idea or a bad idea. There's a lot of stuff in that project, but I did mostly quite traditional software engineering side of it.
Okay, so it's quite, as you say, it's quite a spectrum. So you do get the people who work on the modeling side more than on the software tooling side or the data presentation side, which is also obviously quite important. Since you're working in two different teams, what is the structure of the teams in each that you just described?
I think it varies a lot between projects. Right now, the project I'm working on, it's mainly myself from the Alan Turing Institute. I've also got Oliver Strickson, who's part of the research engineering group as well, but he spends less time on this project specifically. Mm. And we've got a project manager, Maria Iqbal, as well. She's also oversees like how the projects run. So that's the Alan Turing side of it. The rest of it's mainly kind of domain experts from the UKCEH. I think the research engineering group in general, I think we're approaching 50 people in the team, but we are spread across a whole range of projects. So some of them will be smaller projects, such as the one I'm working on, which is one or two people. Others can be 10 plus people, I think.
Yeah, it's also maybe worth mentioning at this point that we're doing a huge reorganization at an institutional level to improve the focus on specific challenges that the journey wants to address. So as a result of this, there's a lot of team restructuring. But I think one of the things that will come out of this is that we'll be able to work in bigger teams that are more focused on one goal, although through different means. And in a way, that's how my project on urban analytics was. There were people looking at land use, but there's also people looking at digital twins. So modeling the population of a region and their daily activities, for example. Mm-hmm. There's people working on transport. So projects that encourage people to use active travel more and lots of things. So there's a lot of amazing collaboration that goes on. And in the research engineering group website, we say that we're expert collaborators. And this is, you kind of don't really understand what this means until you're dropped into one of these and you see the wide range of people that you work with.
Well, if there's one thing I hope has become clear from this episode is how diverse and varied roles in data science can be. And being able to adapt to new scientific domains, new technologies and new paradigms are key. Getting a handle on turning this into a concrete concept of work environments and role and career descriptions, however, is a tall order. But the Alan Turing Institute, nevertheless, is having a stab at it and will present its case studies with a list of suggested personas for discussion in the near future. And we will be hearing about this subject again in this season from a slightly different angle, focusing on the policy and community building aspects next time. And finally, a few thanks are in order. The Professionalization Data Science Roles Project is led by Dr. Emma Caroon and Malvika Sharan, with project management facilitated by Alexandra Araujo Alvarez. They would like to thank all of the teams at the Turing that have contributed to this work, but they would like to especially thank the following people for all the useful discussions and support for this project. First of all, there's Martin O'Reilly and Jim Madge from the Research Engineering Group, REG, Annie Mallon and Louis Santos from Data Wrangling, Aida Mehonig, Jen Ding and Alden Connor from the RAM team, Vera Matzer and Matt Forscher from the Turing Skills team, and Rachel Hilliam, who was the mentor for this project from Alliance for Data Science Professionals, as well as Kirsty Whittaker and Ariel Bennett from TPS. And I'd like to add my thanks to the Alan Turing Institute for supporting this podcast. Oh, time's up. See you next time. But before I forget, This podcast is covered by the Creative Commons license. See ya.